In 1986, during a late-night safety test at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, the worst happened. Reactor 4 underwent a catastrophic power increase and the core exploded, spewing radioactive isotopes into the atmosphere. Although the immediate impact of the disaster was immense, the ecosystem has seemingly recovered for the most part. There have been plenty of studies on the wildlife populations of what is now known as the Chernobyl Exclusion Zone, the area surrounding the nuclear plant that still has levels of radiation high enough to be unfit for habitation. But little is known about how the radiation has impacted bacteria. I'm Laura, and this is Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. Today, we'll be hearing from Dr. Alexandre de Menezes, a lecturer in soil microbiology at NUI Galway. We caught up with him to discuss his research into the complex bacterial community that lives in the soil, known as the soil microbiome. Last year, Alex went to the Chernobyl Exclusion Zone to investigate how the disaster over 30 years ago affected the bacteria that live in the soil. So, Alex, what exactly is a soil microbiome?
So the soil microbiome, it's all of the microbes that are in a sample. That includes unicellular eukaryotes, which would be the protists, and also the fungi, because although they are not prokaryotes, so they're not bacteria, but they are still microscopic, so that's why they're still part of the microbiome. I think when we talk about microbiome, especially to people that are not familiar with the topic, there are a lot of things that have to come across. One of the first things, microbes are not all bad. So, you know, a lot of people, when you think of microbes, bacteria, they immediately think disease, a pathogen. So the microbes are, most of them, I mean, we are surrounded by them all the time. They are part of our bodies. They are a lot of our cells. A lot of the cells in our bodies are microbes. And the soil is the same. Like, the soil is mostly a microbial environment, a microbial habitat, let's say. And the vast majority of these microbes are not dangerous to us, and they're actually driving a lot of processes that are important to society, like nutrient cycling, like decomposition, like fixing nitrogen from the air. So that's one of the things that's important. The microbes are not bad, and they're doing a lot of things that are good and important to society. And another thing is that it's very diverse. So, you know, if you look at a forest and you see a handful of species of trees, but if you're talking about a soil microbiome, you're usually talking about thousands of different bacteria or, you know, different microorganisms that are present in a grain of soil. Thousands or tens of thousands, or maybe even, depending on where you are, maybe hundreds of thousands, but tens of thousands would be a decent estimate. So there are lots of diversity of microbes in soil.
And why is this diversity important?
Diversity is important for a few reasons that we know. So, for example, a lot of these processes that I was talking about, like nutrient cycling, they are genuinely important. So you can't really have agriculture without decomposition, without nutrient cycling. So if you have one species that carry out, say, nitrogen cycling, then if that species go away, then you don't have nitrogen cycling anymore. So diversity is important for one of the things that we call functional redundancy. So if you have multiple species or groups of bacteria or microorganisms that are capable of performing a function, then if you have a change in the ecosystem, at least some of them should be able to keep that function going if one of them disappears. So there is a topic of research now, which is people are trying to understand, you know, the effect of land management, so, you know, bad agricultural practices, for example, on the extinction of microbiota in soil, and see whether that's having an effect on specific functions that are beneficial to soil. So, you know, that's an active area of research. But because the microbial community is so diverse, it's actually hard to study, you know, the effect of diversity, because you have to remove bacteria. And when you remove bacteria or other microorganisms from soil, you're impacting the soil. So it's a difficult topic to study.
Do the microbes in these communities interact with one another?
Yeah, so that's one of the big topics of research right now in microbiome research, not only soil, but also in, you know, in human gut and plant microbiomes, which is traditionally when microbiologists studied microorganisms, they would isolate them and bring them to the lab and then look at what they do in the lab, what they degrade and how they respond to different conditions. But what we are finding is that actually they do interact, and that's precisely why it's difficult to understand what's going on, because there's so many of them and it's hard to look at them in isolation. But yeah, interactions is one of the really important processes that are going on in soil.
Is the soil microbiome consistent around the world, or does it change depending on where you are?
Yes. So there's some common features that we find all over the world in terms of, you know, some main groups that are usually more abundant. But yeah, I mean, it's actually, soil is one of the most diverse ecosystems in terms of microbial diversity. So if you were to take a soil sample and then you move away 10 centimeters, it's already a bit different. And if you move away a meter, it's a bit more different. And, you know, a kilometer, there's always some differences. But usually what you find is variations in the conditions in soil. So especially soil pH, soil moisture, soil mineralogy, so the clay content or the aluminum content or the sand content, all of that has an effect in soil microbiomes. And you do see big differences.
Do the plants in an environment change the soil microbiome?
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the big topics as well, the impact of plants. So we call the microbiome living around plant roots the rhizosphere or the rhizosphere microbiome. And that's usually very distinct from the bulk soil. So that's a very big topic of research now. And, you know, when you do convert a forest to a pasture, or when you convert a grassland, a natural grassland, into a pasture or into a plantation, that usually has a big effect, usually decreased diversity of microorganisms.
What kind of environmental changes could affect the soil microbiome?
Soil is considered in a way relatively stable compared to, say, the microbiome in fresh waters where you have this constant flow of water. So the soil environment tends to be more stable. However, anything that changes that environment will affect the soil microbiome. So in plantations, in croplands, you have fertilization. So people add nitrogen, phosphorus, or, you know, manure, and all of that affects the soil microbiome. Anything that would change the soil pH will have a significant effect on soil microbiome. And in terms of how sensitive they are, sometimes you don't see a change in what microorganisms are there, but the gene expression are changing all the time, and these are the actual activities. So, you know, if you have, it has been seen, for example, that you can look at differences in the fungal activity during day and night because you have changes in temperature, have changes in moisture. Rainfall has a big effect on the microbial community. So, one big topic of research as well is what happens when you have repeated dry and wet periods. How does that affect the microbial community? Because you do see an immediate response when it has been dry for a long time, and then you have rain coming in. You know, it's a stress, but at the same time, microbes need moisture. So you might not see a change in the community composition. So all the microbes might more or less stay the same, but you see a change in their activity, and that will affect the processes the microbes drive in soil, so like nutrient cycling, decomposition, and so on.
That sounds like it must be really difficult to study with there being so many variables.
It is, but that means that there's also a lot of questions to be asked. Everything is connected. So the soil physical properties, the chemical properties, and the biological properties, that they're all connected, and they're all influenced by all these variables like climate and land management. So it is difficult to study, and that's why soil microbiome projects tend to be large. So you have to look at, you know, what is the difference if you go from here to there in terms of 10 centimeters, but what's the difference when you look between two different fields? How variable is it within the field, and how much that variability within a field compares to the variability between fields? And then, you know, does it change over time? So you kind of have to include all of those elements. And at the same time, one of the things that's really difficult is that if you just characterize the microbiome, but you don't characterize the soil, then you don't know why they're changing. So if you're studying the soil microbiome, like other microbiomes, like if you're working in the gut microbiome, the freshwater microbiome, but specifically on soil, you have to look at the soil pH, you have to look at the soil moisture, you have to look at soil nutrients. Preferably, you have to look at what plants are growing there. And preferably, you want to have a look at the climate. Has it been changing in the past 6 months or so? So there's a lot of, it is a lot of work to do this. It's fun as well.
Could you give us some background on how you got into studying the effects of radiation on the soil microbiome?
September last year, I went to the Chernobyl exclusion zone. Before that, I was in soil microbiomes, but not focused on Chernobyl or radiation. And since then, this has become a big part of my work because it's something that generates interest and it hasn't been studied that much. So I've been focusing more on that now. Before my current position here in Ireland, I was working in University of UK, the University of Salford, and there is a professor there, and his career, he's a radioecologist, so he works with radiation for most of his career. And he's been researching Chernobyl together with another scientist from the Center for Ecology and Hydrology, and they've been working mainly with animals, the overall effect on the ecosystem of radiation in Chernobyl. So they have multiple projects there. And what happened was that, as well as the radiation, there was a forest fire in Chernobyl in July 2016. And then they, because there was a fire, they felt it was necessary to do like an emergency sampling of the exclusion zone to see the effect of this fire. So they got funding to go back to Chernobyl and study the effect of fire and radiation on the forest. And then I got a job here, but I was in touch with them. And it was just an opportunity for me. I spoke to them about whether I could join them. And then they said, yeah. And then so I went and I joined them. And basically the sampling that we did was we had multiple sites. We had, I think, 21 sites in the Red Forest and then 3 sites outside of the Red Forest, called Red Forest, because after the explosion, the pine trees that were there, they died, or most of them died, and the needles turned red, basically. So they were called the Red Forest. So the sampling was basically along radiation gradients and fire intensity gradients. And so they went from fairly low radiation to very high radiation levels. So something like 50-fold difference in radiation, let's say, in the soil. And then they also looked at fire intensity levels. And the idea was to see whether, you know, if you have high radiation, low radiation, does that affect the recovery from fire? And then we had sites which are outside the Red Forest. And then we, in each of those 23 sites, we had 3 sub-sites. So in total, we had 69 samples. So I was, because I arrived there 2 days later after they did. So they started the sampling before I did. And then actually processing the samples take time. So I had, when the samples arrive in the station that we were working in, I had to sieve them. So I had to put them through a sieve. And then I had to bag them and, you know, sub-aliquot them and everything. So basically, there wasn't enough time for me to go there to the actual Red Forest, collect sample, bring back and process them. So they were collecting soils for me, and I was in the lab processing them. And the way they do the sampling, basically, they need to wear a whole body suit to protect from, well, not protect from radiation per se, but basically radioactive elements are attached to dust. They're attached to soil particles. So you want to wear these bodysuits to prevent that dust from basically breathing or to get into your clothes and your, you know, your skin. So they're wearing these whole body suits, and they have a dosimeter which quantifies how much radiation they've accumulated, how much they've been exposed to over time. So there's a limit per year that you can basically, it's recommended to stay below. And so they were wearing this. So they would go in the morning, and then come back, and they'll bring soils to me. They would come back at lunchtime and go out again and bring more in the end of the day. And I would be sieving and working away in a little hut. And I was wearing masks to prevent breathing the radioactive dust. And I was wearing goggles, and I had like an overall and double gloves.
Why is the Chernobyl exclusion zone so interesting to microbiologists?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm discovering now. I guess there's various reasons why it is important. One of them is that it's unique. So you had the Chernobyl accident that was 30 years ago, 1986, and then you had a lot of different radioactive elements that were contaminating the environment, not just in Chernobyl, but all over Europe and actually, you know, even further afield. But the Chernobyl region is obviously one of the more impacted areas. And so you have 30 years of exposure to high levels of radiation. So that's one thing. I mean, it's interesting from an evolutionary point of view, what happens to organisms when they're exposed constantly for decades to radiation. Another important topic is when the accident happened, scientists calculated what would be the time it would take for that radiation to go away. Because, you know, with radiation, it decays over time. So you have a reduction, a natural reduction of radiation. And they calculated that based on the half-life of these elements. But it turns out that radiation is sticking around longer than expected. And that is, we believe it's because of biological activity. So organisms tend to accumulate certain elements, some certain radioactive elements, and these elements are recycled in the biosphere. So they go into plant matter, and they go into the organic matter, and fungi tends to take up radioactive elements as well. So it's important first because it's interesting to know that this is happening, but also in terms of, you know, if you have accidents like this happening again, you know, that will help predicting how long it's going to last, the contamination, and then also perhaps find ways to change management of these accidents.
Does that mean that microbes reduce the radioactive half-life when they take up radioactive materials?
It doesn't really elongate the half-life. So the chemical, the cesium-137, for example, it will decay naturally, but what you have is a situation where you'd expect you know, you have the chemical decay going on, but you also expect some of these elements to just be going away through, you know, leaching. So the water takes some of that away. And what's happening is that so when you're calculating the time that you take for the radiation to go away, so the ecological half-life, let's say, you're looking at not only the chemical decay of the elements, but also the type, you know, all these physical processes really, which are taking those elements away from the environment. And what's happening is that they are actually being absorbed into living organisms, particularly the plant matter, and then it's being recycled within the biomass. So they're not going back to mineral soil, they're staying in the organic matter in the soil and then going back into the living biomass. And so that tends to increase time. The radiation is higher than we would have expected based on that.
And what effect has the radiation had on the soil microbiome in the Chernobyl exclusion zone?
So far, what I found was that there is an effect of radiation. And one of the things I found was that the higher radiation samples have lower bacterial and archaeal diversity. I kind of expected that there would be some effect, but I wouldn't be able to say what to expect. So that's one of the things I found, that there was a significant difference in diversity. So overall numbers of bacteria were lower in the highest radiation samples. I also found that basically there's a correlation of between microbial diversity and radiation, meaning that the microbial community composition is shifting along this radiation gradient. So there's a difference in community structure between high and low radiation. But at the moment, I don't know why certain bacterial groups are more abundant in the high radiation. I imagine that some just cannot cope with the higher radiation, and so they are lower in high radiation. But this is actually, it's complicated because the high radiation will also be affecting other organisms. So it's affecting the plant community, it's affecting earthworms, it's affecting burrowing organisms. So whether that change that I see is to do with the actual radiation effect on the microbes, we don't know yet. Microbes that are associated with animals, so animal guts or fecal indicators, they are lower in the higher radiation samples. So that suggests that there are less animals roaming around. But that's, again, it's complicated because we don't know if that's just because they're avoiding high radiation areas or whether the high radiation areas are lower quality habitats. So it's that they're not just avoiding because it's high radiation, but because the explosion happened, you know, when the explosion happened, you had these lumps of material that fell, and then you had soldiers coming in and digging holes. So the areas of high radiation, there might be other variables.
How do your findings compare with other sites that have experienced exposure to radiation?
Chernobyl is unique because it happened 30 years ago, so they had this chronic effect. Some areas have high natural radiation, but that's nowhere near as high as what we find in Chernobyl. And then you have Fukushima in Japan, and I'm aware people doing work and studying microbes, but I don't think anyone's done this kind of work where they looked at radiation gradients. So I can't compare at the moment to any other studies. There was one other study that was done in Chernobyl, but in a different part of Chernobyl, where they did the same sort of thing that I did. So they sequenced the microbial community, but they were not looking at soil gradients. They were looking at a trench that was dug to dispose of contaminated material. So then they compared that with the soil around the trench. And some of the groups that were affected by radiation in the sample were in common with some of the groups that were affected by radiation. But there are really no other studies that I can compare with properly at the moment, which is good for me. But at the same time, it's hard to generalize.
And what are the next steps for your research?
So at the moment, I'm looking for students and postdocs to basically develop projects. One of the things I want to understand is whether this impact is a top-down or a bottom-up impact. So is it the plant community, particularly the plant community, because they are the plants are the most sensitive organisms in the system because they can't move, they can't get away from the radiation, and they accumulate radioactive elements, so they tend to be more exposed. So I want to design experiments where we try to ask that question. Is the effect on the microbial community simply an effect on higher organisms that then feed back onto the microbial community in the soil? Or is it an effect of the radiation in the actual microbial community? So I want to do experiments to test that. But there are other questions. I mean, we have fungi tend to accumulate radioactive elements as well, so radioactivity. So I want to see whether the bacteria that live associated with the fungi, whether they're affected more because of that. And then I also want to use sort of more sophisticated sequencing techniques to study the effect on the actual function of the microbial community. So at the moment, I'm looking at just diversity, but I want to be able to look at their function to see whether the microorganisms have evolved adaptations to the radiation over time. So that would be the next step. I'd like to think that the Chernobyl explosion zone work is something that can be used, as well as those findings that I'm hoping to find about, you know, the effect of radiation, as a way to bring attention to science. You know, like I think that there's an element of this research which is to showcase science to people that are not necessarily directly involved in this research, because I think sometimes people think that science are just doing random things and not very important. And, you know, science has a value in terms of generating these inventions that may help with medicine and everything, and, you know, generating novel technologies. But also science has a value in the sense of just attracting people to science, because then that generates more interesting science, generates more scientists. And I think that that's a value of science, which I think the Chernobyl research can add to, because it's something that people immediately recognize.
And that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us, Alex. And thank you ever so much for listening. I've been Laura, and this has been Microbe Talk, a podcast from the Microbiology Society. To find out more about microbiomes and why they are important, check out our blog, What is a Microbiome, for more information. I'll leave a link for that in the podcast description below.